The Food Safety Modernization Act, passed 3 years ago, boosted the Food and Drug Administration's power to keep our food supply safe. But like any new law, the devil is in the details, and they've been a long time coming. The FDA is still working on major rules under this law. Mike Taylor is FDA's Deputy Commissioner for Food and Veterinary Medicine, and he joins us now for an update. Mike, great to have you on.
Great to be here, Emily.
So give us an overview. The law has been in effect for about 3 years now. How has it changed the FDA and its approach to food?
Well, let's first just be clear what this law is all about. You know, it really is the most sweeping, by far the most sweeping overhaul of federal food safety law and regulation since the first federal food safety law was passed in 1906. And it's really reflective of a process that's been underway in the food safety community for some time, as we've learned that we can, if we apply the right preventive measures at each step of the food production and processing system, we can be much more effective in preventing the foodborne illness outbreaks and harms to both public and the food system that, you know, we've experienced in recent decades. So it's a hugely complex, comprehensive reform of the system that begins with, as you indicated, getting the rules in place that define the standards for prevention that the food industry must follow and be more accountable for following in the work that they do every day. And so this has involved a very comprehensive rulemaking process. We've published since last January, a year ago, 7 major proposed regulations that will establish this prevention framework on the farm where produce is grown, in processing facilities where food is manufactured and stored, and in transportation of food, as well as proposals for ensuring that the imported food meets these same standards. So we've got great momentum in getting the regulatory framework in place. We've gotten a lot of comments from the public, from the industry, from consumer groups, from grower communities, and so we're well on our way to establishing these rules. But this is going to take a while. It'll be next year, 2015, when most of these proposed rules will become final.
So you've got 7 major regulations under your belt. How many more to go?
Well, these are the most significant ones. There are 2 or 3 other regulations to come addressing things like traceability and accreditation of labs that are relied upon for food safety testing. But these 7 are really the central regulatory framework that Congress envisioned when it passed the law and the President signed it in 2011.
Can you just give us an update? I know there was a lawsuit against the FDA. Some consumer advocates brought it. It was recently settled. It had to do with some rules that they were waiting for.
Well, Congress gave us this enormous workload and set of regulations and some time frames for getting these regulations issued that, frankly, I think we all realized at the very beginning were just not possible. And so we have prioritized this work and, as I said, made great progress in getting these proposed regulations published. This lawsuit really was a vehicle for establishing an agreed upon time frame for completing the final rule. So there was a settlement of this that has laid out a time frame that we're working towards, as I said, to get the final rules done for the most part in 2015. So, and we think that given the complexity of this, and the need to look at these rules as they interconnect and they relate to each other, again, in transforming, you know, a $2 trillion food system in terms of the way in which we oversee food safety, we need to take the time to get this right, you know, as well as prioritizing, you know, getting it done in a timely way, because there are important public health issues at stake here. Everybody wants to get this done as quickly as we can, but get it done right.
So, and that leads back to my initial question, which is, how has this act changed the FDA? I mean, is it a different place? Is the agency a different place than it was in 2010?
Well, and I think in many ways, yes. You know, Congress has really directed us, and again, it's a mandate that we fully welcome, you know, to really redesign our whole approach to oversight, to be risk-based, meaning targeting the areas where our interventions can do the most good for public health, but to work with our state partners, to work with the industry, to work with foreign government partners, you know, to have a much more collaborative approach to ensuring that the steps that should be taken to prevent food safety problems are being taken. And so it's important for people to realize that in addition to the rulemaking, you know, getting the regulations right, we're investing incredible effort in preparing ourselves to implement the rules, to be in a position, again, working with partners in the public sector and private sector to be able to verify that the rules are in fact, that the standards established in the rules are in fact being met, because that's how food will be safer. And so this is getting as much time and attention here at FDA. That is, the transformation of how we do our work in overseeing the rules is getting as much attention as development of the rules themselves, because, again, that's where the rubber meets the road for food safety.
And the seven rules that you've already finalized, when do you start enforcing them?
Well, that, as we've proposed, it will happen on a staggered basis, and it will vary from rule to rule. But as we've currently proposed it, the basic rules governing processing facilities and their requirement to have so-called preventive controls in place, that regulation would be final in late summer of 2015. And then for the largest facilities, largest food processing facilities, they would be required to be in compliance with that 1 year later. But then we stagger that compliance date for smaller firms. We're going to give some more time for produce operations, because, again, in the produce arena, we're regulating for the first time on the farm. I mean, this is a very novel undertaking. So in that case, for example, we're going to give 2 years from the final, the date the rules are final, to allow folks time to comply. So there's a constant balance in an effort like this where we're bringing about kind of major change in how we do our work, how companies need to verify that they're doing the right thing for food safety. We've got to strike a balance between getting it done, you know, rapidly, but getting it done in a way that's practical and workable across this incredibly large and diverse food system that we regulate.
We're speaking with Mike Taylor. He's the FDA's Deputy Commissioner for Food and Veterinary Medicine. And some food safety advocates have worried that the FDA doesn't have the resources or won't in a year or so's time to fully enforce the law. Describe a little bit the resources that you have now and what you expect to have in a couple of years.
Well, we share that concern about resources because, as I indicated, we've got to build whole new systems within our agency, and we've got to support the state role in food safety. We've got to build a whole new import system. We want to provide technical assistance to small growers and small processors. You know, this will take additional resources for sure. The Congressional Budget Office estimated that we needed an increase above our base funding of about $600 million. We think strategically we can redeploy resources and do it for somewhat less than that. But last spring, Secretary Sebelius sent a report to Congress saying that there was a FSMA funding gap of around $400 million. So this is serious. The President's budget for 2015 asked for $253 million. To support FSMA implementation. $24 million of that is in new budget authority, but the remainder, most of the funding requested, is in user fees that Congress still needs to authorize legislatively. So, and that's an uphill battle politically, quite frankly. So we have a big challenge to get the resources to fund this. And, you know, we'll be discussing this tomorrow. Secretary Hamburg testifies at our House Appropriations hearing on the Hill tomorrow morning, and I think we'll be very clear that if we don't get the resources that we need to do the job that Congress has given us, we will fall short of what's expected.
So is my math right that about two-thirds of the money that you need, you're expecting to come, or you hope to come, from user fees?
With respect to the 2015 budget request, at least that percentage is coming from user fees, probably more than that. It's really, again, of the 253, about 90% of it is coming from proposed user fees that need to be authorized.
Okay. And regarding the new SIMP systems, rather, that you need to put in place with importation and with other things, are any of those systems already in place, or are they still to come?
Well, with respect to imports, no. I mean, Congress has mandated a whole new system that shifts from the historic model of relying almost entirely on FDA inspectors at ports of entry checking product when it comes in, only being able to examine about 2% of the entries, the import entries. And if we catch problems, we can keep the product out, but it depends on us catching the problem. This new system requires importers to have a so-called foreign supplier verification program in place, meaning they have to take responsibility as importers for knowing that and verifying in a documented way that the foreign grower or processor is producing product in accordance with U.S. standards. That's a big transformation. Require a whole new skill set on our part to audit these essentially supply chain management systems, But Congress has gone beyond that. In addition to that shift towards prevention at the port of entry, we're given the mandate to conduct more foreign inspections, to work more thoroughly, more completely with foreign governments, to partner with foreign governments. These are great ideas. We want to do these things, but we can only do these new things if we have new resources.
And how has the cooperation with other countries, major suppliers like China, how has that been? Have they been willing to meet the FDA with these new requirements?
Well, you know, food safety modernization is really a global movement, and so our trading partners, almost without exception, have their own initiatives underway to improve food safety, and so that's very positive. We're working closely with all of our major trading partners, including China. Just for example, we have a very senior delegation of officials from Mexico here at FDA today, starting a three-day meeting that's all about building our partnership to ensure the safety of produce coming from Mexico to the United States, and we depend heavily on imported produce, you know, year-round. So, so partnership with foreign governments is central to the strategy. It's essential, and we're very optimistic that that will be a very positive part of implementation in the years to come.
So they're not viewing this law as U.S. red tape that could stifle exports.
Well, I think any time we're regulating trade and imports, people have those concerns and questions, and you know, we're committed and. Under the law, we're obligated to be sure that we meet all of our trade agreement obligations, and nobody wants to impede trade and safe food. In fact, we want to facilitate trade and safe food, and we think actually food safety and trade go hand in hand, because if we can do a good job ensuring the safety of imports, that strengthens public confidence and strengthens the basis for trade. So we see no fundamental conflict there, but you know, we have to be careful. Anytime we regulate, we have to be sure that we're doing it in a way that achieves the food safety, the public health purpose, you know, with minimal, you know, while minimizing the impact and costs on industry.
And even though it is nowhere near fully implemented, this law has been in effect for 3 years. There are other agencies and departments that have responsibilities under it. Has it made any impact on our food supply?
Yeah, I think a couple ways. One, I think by virtue of the fact that the industry knows that this obligation to implement modern preventive controls is coming, I think that's helped to catalyze and speed up the transition that many in the industry have already been making on their own voluntarily to implement these modern preventive measures. So we think it's very clear where the food system is going in terms of modern preventive controls, and we think the law has helped to speed that along. The law will give us real ability to ensure accountability and verification and transparency about these efforts, but we think the efforts are going along in a positive way. The law has also given us new tools that we're using right now. I mean, we have much stronger access to the records of food companies to verify that their food safety practices when there's an issue about food safety. We've got the ability to suspend, basically shut a company down, which is new authority, if we think they're putting consumers at risk, and we've used that authority already. So, yeah, there are ways in which it's already strengthened what we do on the ground, but we have to look at FSMA as a long-term systems transformation. It will take time, but we're laying the foundation, really, for a modern food safety system for this century, and so it's understandable that we would take the time, and it will take time and resources to get it done well.
And just briefly, what was that company or what was that food product supply that the company that you just referred to that you shut down?
Well, we've done this a couple of times. One was just with respect to a peanut butter operation, Sunland Inc. In New Mexico. And then just this month, there was a Delaware a cheese facility, Roos Foods, that where we directed the plant cease operations.